My paper is entitled Human Infrahuman, Humanism in New World Science Fiction, and I will be discussing several of the novels of Octavia Butler this afternoon. Octavia Butler is a very famous, accomplished African-American science fiction writer. She's published several novels, short stories, and essays. She's also the recipient of the prestigious Hugo and Nebula Awards in science fiction. Science fiction's indebtedness to and investment in humanism is evident in its preoccupation with the human, and more specifically, its interrogation of who or what constitutes a human being. Numerous science fiction texts demonstrate a concern with the humanness of aliens, androids, cyborgs, and sentient machines, monsters, and animals, from Mary Shelley's 1818 novel Frankenstein to more recent Hollywood productions such as the Terminator and Matrix films. This concern is often articulated through and with the theme of slavery. Like many other science fiction writers, Octavia Butler uses the theme of slavery to examine the human. Yet Butler's black feminist science fiction reclaims humanism for those historically excluded from the category, and in doing so, it expands definitions of human being. Although its roots extend to the classical period, for the purposes of this essay, I am most interested in early modern conceptions of humanism as a viewpoint espousing an optimism about human possibilities and achievements. With the Enlightenment, humanism came to be associated with the autonomy, agency, moral and political choice, and dignity of the individual, as articulated by human, civil, and political rights. As so-called savages, barbarians, infidels, heathens, and/or slaves, certain people, such as most people of color, many colonized peoples, many non-Christians, many poor people, and women by and large, have been excluded from Western definitions of civilization, modernity, and the human. In short, they have been denigrated as what Paul Gilroy terms infrahuman, that is, subhuman or unhuman. Yesterday, Ken's presentation got me to thinking about the human as yet another identity category. I thought, what is there beyond identity? Is there anything beyond identity? I agree with him. I think that identity politics is often limited. It's restrictive. It often results in a dead end. At the same time, I ask, what recourse do those who have been denied an identity or who have been discriminated against because of their identities have? And if we claim the human as a means of ending injustices, are we not claiming another identity? This is a question with which I'm struggling, and perhaps some of you can help me to answer it. The histories of so-called infrahuman people are in part marked by their struggles to expand definitions of human being and to extend the values, dictates, and promises of humanism to those who have been excluded from the category human. Octavia Butler underscores and participates in these struggles in and through her many works, most notably Kindred, Wild Seed, Parable of the Sower, and Parable of the Talents. I could talk about numerous other novels. She's published 11, but for the sake of brevity, I'm not going to. And these four works were published between 1979 and 1998. At first glance, Kindred, Wild Seed, and the Parable series do not seem to have much in common. In fact, Butler distinguishes Kindred from her other publications by classifying it as fantasy rather than as science fiction. Yet, like many science fiction narratives, Kindred is about time travel. Its protagonist, Dana Franklin, a 26-year-old African-American woman, travels between her home in L.A. in 1976 and a plantation in 19th-century Maryland, home of both her black and white ancestors. In contrast, Wild Seed opens in a West African village in 1690 and it closes in the American South in 1840. while Kindred's protagonist is an ordinary woman who finds herself in extraordinary situations, Anyanwu, the protagonist of Wildseed, is far from typical or normal. Rather, she is a 300-year-old mutant with superhuman strength who is brought to North America as a slave. Throughout the novel, Anyanwu, whose original form is that of a young, heterosexual African woman, transforms herself into many life forms, including that of an elderly priestess, a young man, a leopard, a dolphin, a dog, an eagle, and a wealthy white man. Unlike Kindred and Wildseed, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents offer a much more common science fiction scenario, future dystopia. Both novels are set in a 21st century California plagued by pollution, global warming, drought, economic crisis, racial violence, and war. When Parable of the Sower opens in the year 2024, the protagonist, Lauren Olamina, is a bored, precocious African-American teenager living in a suburb of Los Angeles. She is also a so-called sharer. That is, she suffers from a disease known as hyperempathy, which causes her to experience others' physical sensations as viscerally as her own. Lauren experiences others' pleasure and pain, but given the fact that the novel takes place in a dystopic world, she feels more pain than pleasure. When Parable of the Sower's sequel, Parable of the Talents, closes, Lauren is 81 years old and the founder of Earthseed, a growing religion whose followers believe that God is change and that humans must migrate to other solar systems. Despite all their differences, many of Butler's novels have at least one characteristic in common. They are about slavery. Indeed, slavery is a prevalent theme in much science fiction. Numerous popular science fiction works, such as Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Blade Runner, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, the Matrix series, the Planet of the Apes series, the Terminator series, present scenarios in which humans or human-like creatures have been enslaved, usually by machines, monsters, or aliens. In some works, most notably Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the Matrix, and Voyager and Deep Space Nine episodes that feature the Borg, powerful alien forces seize not only human beings' bodies, but our minds as well. Furthermore, images of the slave ship permeate much science fiction. For example, in the television series Alien Nation, a spaceship transporting slaves crash lands in the California desert. Meanwhile, in the Star Wars films, novels, and comic books, the notorious bounty hunter Boba Fett spaceship is known as the slave. However, Octavia Butler's treatment of slavery differs greatly from depictions of slavery in much white science fiction, for she clearly situates the subject within the history of people of African descent in the United States. She does so by grounding her novels in specific African-American experiences. For example, Kindred is about a young black woman's struggle to come to terms with the history of slavery and violence of which she is a product, and upon which her very existence is predicated. When the novel opens, Dana, the protagonist, is thrust back to the 19th century to rescue a white boy who is drowning in a pond. And she later learns that this white boy is her ancestor. He grows up to inherit the plantation and its slaves, and she ends up being thrown back to the 19th century very violently every time he's in danger. She needs to rescue him because her very own survival depends on his. However, Kindred is not only about one woman's personal and family history, but the history of black slavery in the United States in general. In fact, at least one literary critic has placed the novel within the literary tradition of the African-American slave narrative. Similarly, Wildseed draws upon the history of the Atlantic slave trade. Its protagonist, Anyanwu, is brought from Africa to a town called Wheatley in New York, where she is made a slave and a breeder of slaves. She's forced to have sex and bear children, who are then controlled by her nemesis. Eventually, she escapes from Wheatley by transforming herself into an eagle. Keep in mind that she is a mutant. She's capable of changing life forms, and flying away. Toward the novel's conclusion, she assumes the form of a wealthy white male plantation owner in Louisiana. Anyan Wu's plantation, however, is actually more of a commune, as well as a sanctuary for the slaves whose freedom she purchases in the form of a white man at the slave markets in New Orleans. As in Africa, Anyan Wu bears generations of descendants in the United States and ultimately takes the name Emma because, and here I'm quoting from the novel, she had heard that it meant grandmother or ancestress. Incidentally, Wheatley, the name of the town in which Anyan Wu settles when she first arrives in the New World, may refer to Phyllis Wheatley, the 18th century African-American slave poet and, according to some literary critics, matriarch of African-American letters. References to the history of African-American slavery in the United States also permeate Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents. In both novels, many of Lauren's companions and converts are fugitive and or former slaves. Some are former agricultural contract laborers whose relationships with their employers and working conditions resemble those of segregation-era sharecroppers in the United States. As they journey from Los Angeles to rural Northern California in Parable of the Sower, Lauren refers to her group as, quote, the crew of a modern underground railroad, unquote, and teaches her companions, many of whom are illiterate, to read and write. Like the famous African-American slave and slave liberator Harriet Tubman, Lauren disguises herself as a man as she travels north, and at one point she gazes at her husband and compares him to the black American abolitionist Frederick Douglass. In Parable of the Talents, Lauren and her companions are captured and enslaved by a group known as the Crusaders. The Crusaders are an ultra-right-wing Christian fundamentalist group. Like many 19th-century American proponents of slavery, they justify slavery in religious terms. They rename Acorn, the community that Lauren and other Earthseed followers have established, Camp Christian Reeducation Facility. While Acorn resembles a kibbutz or a commune, Camp Christian is more like a plantation or concentration camp. However, this is not to say that Butler's novels focus exclusively on African-American slavery or slavery in the United States prior to 1865. In addition to exploring the slavery of the past, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents scrutinize modern slavery, or what Kevin Bales has termed the new slavery. Bales defines slave as a person held by violence or the threat of violence for economic exploitation and estimates that there are 27 million slaves in the world today, even though slavery is supposedly illegal everywhere. He argues that the new slavery is a contributor to and product of the global economy as it simultaneously increases profits for manufacturers and lowers prices for consumers. Bales identifies three forms of the new slavery. Number one, chattel slavery. Number two, debt bondage. And number three, contract slavery. Chattel slavery is a form most similar to the old slavery. A person may be captured, born, or sold into permanent servitude, and ownership is often asserted. The slave's children are normally treated as property as well and can be sold by the slaveholder. In debt bondage, currently the most common form of slavery in the world, according to Kevin Bales, a person pledges him or herself against a loan of money. Ownership is not normally asserted, but there is complete physical control of the bonded laborer and often his or her offspring. Lastly, contract slavery involves the use of contracts to trick a person into slavery and to disguise slavery as legitimate employment. Bales emphasizes that the three types of slavery are not mutually exclusive, that they occur everywhere in the world, including the United States, and that anyone of any race or ethnicity can be a slave. Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents foreground all three forms of the new slavery. In Butler's 21st century, men, women, and children of all races and ethnicities are frequently abducted by slavers and sold into bondage. Like the contract slaves, can't win against the machines. Like the contract slaves, Bales describes, others enter slavery unwittingly but of their own accord. These characters in the novels move to walled towns owned by a single company with the belief that they will work in exchange for protection from the violence of the outside world, only to find that they have been enslaved. Many toil for long hours and little pay, usually in the form of company scrip, on farms owned by large agribusiness conglomerates or in so-called border works, factories that bear a strong resemblance to current-day maquiladoras along the U.S.-Mexico border. Border works in Butler's novels are owned by multinational corporations, and their laborers produce goods that are shipped to Canada or Asia. They also work in unsafe conditions, as they breathe toxic fumes, drink contaminated water, and sometimes get caught in unshielded machinery. Their welfare is unimportant to their employer masters because, Butler writes, they're easy to replace, thousands of jobless for every job. What's more, agribusiness and border works laborers live in company towns where the cost of living exceeds their meager earnings. Not surprisingly, they fall into debt and subsequently into debt slavery. In Parable of the Talents, the reader learns that slavery is supposed to be illegal, but that indentured servitude is perfectly legal. The 13th and 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution still exist, although custom and law alike have rendered them all but extinct in this novel. Lauren recognizes slavery and indentured servitude as a means of exploiting a growing pool of poor, unskilled, increasingly desperate, disposable laborers. She writes, in her journal, the novels, incidentally, take the form of Lauren's journals. They're written in the epistolary form. So Lauren writes in her journal, indenturing indigents is supposed to keep them employed, teach them a trade, feed them, house them, and keep them out of trouble. In fact, it's just one more way of getting people to work for nothing or almost nothing. According to science fiction writer and critic Philip K. Dick, science fiction is not so much about aliens, spaceships, and zap guns, but about what he described as our known society, our world, dislocated by some kind of mental effort on the part of the author. Butler explicitly links the slavery in her fictional 21st century to our world of the late 20th and early 21st centuries. In Parable of the Sower, Lauren's husband recalls hearing about slaves when he was growing up in the early 1990s. And in a 1999 interview, Butler claimed that she wrote the parable series as a means of speculating what might happen in the United States if poor people, in particular poor people of color and poor immigrants, continue to be pushed to the margins of society. I wrote the way I did about education in the two novels because I kept hearing or reading such contempt for public education and at the same time such enthusiasm for the building and filling of more and more prisons, she explained in an interview. Incidentally, in the United States, a number of prisoners work as unpaid laborers in various industries. For example, some prisoners are telemarketers. In the United States, many of us receive phone calls in the evening around dinner time from telemarketers who are trying to sell us something, trying to give us a lower interest rate on a mortgage on for our house, or trying to sell us magazine subscriptions. In many instances, these people calling us are calling from prisons. The prisoners' labor is subcontracted out. In addition, Butler noted that while writing Parable of the Talents, voters in California passed the infamous Proposition 187. Proposition 187 set out to deny undocumented immigrants access to public education and health care in the state of California. And it was a very controversial initiative, but in 1994, the majority of voters in California voted for it. Ultimately, however, the courts deemed it illegal, so it never went into law. Octavia Butler expressed anger that Proposition 187 supporters attempted to create a permanent underclass of what she described as sick, uneducated people willing to accept dirty, ill-paid, dangerous jobs. Proposition 187's critics claimed that it would just drive undocumented workers even farther underground, that when they got sick, they wouldn't go to the doctor, because it would also transform doctors and teachers into agents of what was then known as the Immigration and Naturalization Service. So throughout the parable novels, Butler repeatedly returns to the query prominent in much science fiction: who or what is a human being? In Parable of the Sower, human is defined in terms of its inverse. One is not human if one is a so-called monster or animal, that is, if one derives pleasure from another's suffering. And there are many monstrous, animalistic characters in these novels. For example, there are people who are called paints, and they're called paints because they shave their heads and they cover their bodies with paint, and they're pyromaniacs. They wreak havoc by setting fire to people's homes and then murdering them. So Lauren refers to the paints as, quote, people who aren't human anymore. After a gang of paints raids and destroys her neighborhood in Parable of the Sower, she and two other survivors decide to head north. As they walk along California's derelict highways, she and her companions confront wild dogs, thieves, rapists, murderers, cannibals, and more paints. Because they are forced to steal or starve and must kill or be killed, one of her companions fears that they too, quote, will turn into animals, unquote. In Parable of the Talents, Butler closely examines the relationship between humanity, infrahumanity, and slavery. The Crusaders, the fundamentalist Christians, who invade Lauren's Earthseed commune, deny Lauren and other Earthseed followers their humanity by referring to them as heathens and dogs. As slaves, she and her companions are forced to wear electronic collars, which are also known as dog collars and choke chains. As long as the collars are activated, they are unable to escape from the camp, to attack their masters, or to defend themselves or anyone else. Additionally, the slavers can and do use the collars to sic slaves on one another. Lauren's brother Mark warns that a collar, quote, makes you turn traitor against your kind, against your freedom, against yourself, unquote. Finally, the collars are used to torture and execute their wearers. After she is brutally electronically lashed for attempting to kill one of her captors, Lauren suffers from temporary amnesia and is transformed into what she herself describes as a zombie. She is shocked and dismayed when she realizes the power the slavers have over her. And here I quote from her novel, "I knew that strangers could appear and steal or destroy everything and everyone I loved. People and possessions could be snatched away, but somehow it had not occurred to me that bits of my own mind could be snatched away too." Throughout Talents, Butler stresses that slavery involves both physical and psychic... Sorry. Okay, listo? All right. Throughout Talents, Butler stresses that slavery involves both physical and psychic domination of another. Lauren compares the wearing of a collar to hyper-empathy. Again, hyper-empathy is the disease that she suffers from. She experiences others... physical sensations as if they were her own. So Lauren compares the wearing of a collar to hyper-empathy, except that instead of sharing what other people feel, the wearer feels whatever the person holding the control unit wants him or her to feel. In addition, she witnesses a few Earthseed followers convert to Christianity. Some do so to appease their captors. Lauren herself poses as a Christian in order to protect herself. However, others slowly and truly reject their beliefs and favors and values in favor of those of their masters. As an act of self-preservation, Lauren manages to write in her journal on Sundays, the day that the Crusaders leave her and the other slaves alone. She finds that writing provides her with a necessary sense of interiority and privacy. She writes in her novel, "My writing is a way for me to remind myself that I am human, that God is change, and that I will accept this place, that I will, excuse me, escape this place." In short, it reminds her of who and what she is, of her beliefs and values, and of her hope for the future. Above all, writing reminds Lauren that even though her body, will, and memories can be stolen from her, she is still human. At first glance, Parable of the Talents seems to define human in terms of the cerebral and in opposition to the carnal. Although Lauren has lost ownership of her body, she is human because she still has her mind. She is confined within Camp Christian, but is able to escape to the realm of thought at least one day per week. In other words, Lauren thinks, therefore she is. However, upon further investigation, one finds that she does not exemplify the Cartesian subject par excellence. For she is human not so much because she thinks, but because she feels. Indeed, the Parable series, like Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, define human in terms of empathy. empathy, the identification with or vicarious experiencing of another's feelings, thoughts, or attitudes is precisely what makes one human. That is, the ability to step outside of oneself rather than self alone defines human. Lauren's hyper-empathy makes her painfully human and prevents her from becoming a monster or animal. In Butler's nightmarish 21st century, slavers use the electronic collars not only to control their slaves' bodies, but to rob them of that which makes them human, the ability to empathize. As the parable series illustrates, Butler's definition of human differs greatly from some Enlightenment-era definitions. First, Butler's human is not the subject of reason exclusively. Instead, Butler's human thinks and feels. Nor is Butler's human a closed, autonomous agent. Rather, Butler defines self in relation to others rather than in and of itself. She does so through her exploration of empathy and her emphasis on community, both of which erase boundaries between individuals. In all of her novels, not just the Parable series, Butler's protagonists must learn to forge new communities. In Parable of the Sower, for example, Lauren gathers people around her after her family is murdered by a group of paints. And she writes in her journal, "In spite of your loss and pain, you aren't alone. You still have people who care about you and want you to be all right. You still have family." Likewise, in Parable of the Talents, she once again builds a new family after the Crusaders demolish the commune that she and the other Earthseed followers established. The Crusaders also kill her husband and kidnap her infant daughter, Larkin. Even though she's reunited with her brother and ultimately with her adult daughter, Lauren continues to define community in terms of affinity rather than biology or essence. As her daughter, Larkin, bitterly observes, quote, "All Earthseed was her family. We never were, Uncle Mark and I," unquote. And she uses the term uncle, I think, to emphasize the family relationship, the biological relationship. In contrast, Larkin and Mark define family exclusively in terms of blood. Mark invites his niece to live with him because, as he tells her, quote, "Your family, the only family I have," unquote. And throughout her novels, Butler seems to privilege these fabricated, false families. For Larkin and Mark, the biological family is smaller, it's more limited and less rewarding than the extended family that Lauren creates via her religion. In his essay, Remarks on Legitimation Through Human Rights, Jürgen Habermas comments on critiques of what he calls the individualistic character of human rights. He points out that in the West, human rights have been defined in terms of a possessive individualism stemming from the Lockean tradition. Whereas in other parts of the world, especially Asia and Africa, he notes, human is often not defined as the individual, but in the context of a collective. Arguing that the status of legal persons as right bearers develops only in the context of a legal community, which is premised on the mutual recognition of its freely associated members, Habermas calls for a new understanding of human rights and defines human rights in terms of community rather than the individual. I quote from his essay, "The understanding of human rights must jettison the metaphysical assumption of an individual who exists prior to all socialization and, as it were, comes into the world already equipped with innate rights. The choice between individualist and collective approaches disappears once we approach fundamental legal concepts with an eye toward the dialectical unity of individuation and socialization processes." Without this kind of communitarianism, a properly understood individualism remains incomplete, he writes. Via the theme of slavery and in the critiques of slavery, both past and present, Octavia Butler's novels redefine human, not as free-floating atom, but as an integral part of a network of constructed interconnectedness. And by constructed, I mean fabricated. Furthermore, they impart the values and dictates of humanism as human rights to those historically excluded from the category human, including and especially slaves. Lastly, the Parable novels in particular extend humanism into the 21st century, a time when there are more slaves living in the world than at any other moment in history, according to Kevin Bales. Butler's science fiction stresses that the promises of the past must be reshaped for the challenges and present of the future. Because much science fiction links past, present, and future and represents It represents and produces a kind of temporal borderland. With its roots in the pulp novels of the early 20th century, much American science fiction in particular is located at the border between what's been termed low, popular, and mass culture and high culture, as represented by academia, including settings such as this. Above all, the subject of much science fiction, especially Octavia Butler's, it concerns the porous and unstable borders between humans and between the human and non-human. Butler explores the limits of individuality and individual consciousness via the concept of empathy in many of her novels, including the Xenogenesis trilogy, which consists of Dawn, Imago, and Adulthood Rights, Kindred as well, Wildseed, and lastly, the Parable series. Those are my comments for today. Thank you very much.